Everybody can put themselves on mute. That would be great, unless you're directed to speak. All right, the time now is 8:30, and it's March 25th, 2022, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, would you like to do the roll call?
Yes, Madam Chair. Dr. Davis-Wilson? Dr. Meyer?
Present.
Ms. Shreve?
Present.
We have quorum.
Thank you. And we do know Dr. Davis-Wilson will be joining us later, but we do have a quorum, so we're going to go ahead and proceed. The third agenda item is approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the February 23rd regular and executive session minutes?
So moved.
We have a motion. I will second. All in favor? Aye. Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Item number four on the agenda is the case study, case discussion and decisions. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to ARS 3220-81H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on the agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to a telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, pursuant to ARS 3220-81H1. Upon the majority of the quorum, committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records or subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from our board's attorney, Ms. Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon parties present and request to speak. Please use initials only for patients, children, and complainants. Be aware that the content and many records involved in these complaints is confidential, and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief comment to the board up to 5 minutes, only when prompted by the chair. Additionally, the licensee or respondent who is subject to the complaint will also have the opportunity to make a brief 5-minute statement, only when prompted by the chair. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement is made. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from another party, it will make this request during the case review. For anyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant respondent and their legal representative may unmute themselves at the time. We are now going to go to our first agenda item. I am, as the chair, I'm gonna take the privilege of going to complaint number four, agenda item 4C, which is complaint 2012. Dr. Raymond Brenton, Dr. Myers, you are the lead on this complaint. Would you like to provide a brief summary?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Brenton was issued his psychology license by the board in 2005. He's maintained a private practice called Arizona Psychology Consultants. Much of his work is focused on forensic services for family court matters. The mother and father of the for this issue have been engaged in contentious divorce custody proceedings regarding their four minor children. Mother filed for divorce in December of 2020. In February 2021, the court ordered mother temporary sole legal decision making for all of the children. Father was ordered unsupervised parenting time every other weekend. In June 21, mother initiated individual therapy services that were not court ordered for her teenage son with Dr. Brenton. Son was 15 years old at the onset of services. Dr. Brenton conducted an intake session with both parents individually. Son participated in several sessions with Dr. Brenton between July and November of 2021. In September of 2021, during the course of son's treatment, mother's attorney subpoenaed Dr. Brenton's therapy notes which he provided in October of 2021. Mother's attorney provided the notes to father's attorney. Dr. Brenton's note for son's last session reflects that father attempted to physically intimidate him. The complainant is JJ, the founder and executive director of an organization based in New York called the Foundation for Child Victims of the Family Courts. Foundation's website says its mission is to help parents navigate the family court system and to protect children against the system. JJ represents she is assisting the father. In August 2021, JJ filed a complaint against Dr. Branton concerning a different family, and a claim was not opened for this. In November 2021, JJ sent a letter to the board, as well as to Dr. Branton and the parents' attorneys, on behalf of the father, requesting that a complaint be opened against Dr. Branton. JJ alleged that the son disclosed to JJ that Dr. Branton inappropriately exposed himself to son and touched son's private areas during therapy sessions. A complaint was subsequently opened by the board upon consultation with the Attorney General's office. On November 10th, 21, prior to sending her letter to the board, JJ filed a police report with the Mesa Police Department regarding the allegations of sexual misconduct. Dr. Branton subsequently terminated son's treatment after receiving a threatening email on November 15th, 2021 from JJ regarding these allegations. a minute entry for the parents, December 3rd, 2021 family court hearing reflects that the therapist, Dr. Raymond Branton, addresses the court regarding his concerns related to harassment by father. Father is admonished and that he should cease any harassment of Dr. Branton. On March 11th, 2022, board staff spoke with the assigned detective from Mesa PD who was investigating the allegations of indecent exposure. It was relayed that no criminal charges were being pursued against Dr. Branton and that the case would be closed out in the near future. Excuse me. Just a little bit more about the complaint. During and from JJ, her initial discussion with father, he expressed concern for the son who had become increasingly withdrawn over the past 7 to 8 months. Father relayed that all of the children complained that mother continually yelled at them, criticized them, and blamed father for acts that the children knew he did not engage in. JJ conducted an intensive document review, narrative history of timeline, court proceedings, and overall detailed review, and was quickly followed by a meeting with the son, the 15-year-old son. Father gave permission for JJ to speak confidentially with son. The plan was for JJ to speak individually with son and then to speak with son and father together. Following several hours of meeting with the son and doing a document review, JJ had a good understanding of the events that had transpired over the past year. And she determined that she had an excellent grip on very disturbing, dark, malevolent acts of fraud, intentional child sexual abuse, manipulation, actionable threats of intimidation and coercion. Prior to meeting with JJ, the son had never disclosed the facts of physical touching engaged by Dr. Branton or the acts of masturbation engaged by Dr. Branton during a session with the son. JJ is concerned that the board appears to have developed a protocol to protect the criminals before them by locking the ranks of co-conspirators that exonerate perpetrators of heinous crimes against children and protective parents. The licensee's response, Dr. Branton noted that he's been practicing since 2003. He's the founder and clinical director of Arizona Psychology Associates and Professional Counseling Associates. He's a preferred provider for the Arizona Court in both Maricopa and Arizona counties. He noted
that
he's not a fan
of
victim mentality. And I'm getting some really bad feedback.
I muted somebody else, so it should be good now.
Thank you. So Dr. Branton is concerned that this case is ultimately about credibility. Noted that JJ is not licensed, but previously held a clinical social worker license in Arizona, which was revoked in 2005 after they made a finding that JJ used fraud or deceit in connection with her qualifications for certification. She also lost her social worker license in New Jersey. The fact that JJ lost multiple professional licenses is relevant because it demonstrates that she has a persistent pattern of dishonesty. The foundation doesn't have any other employees besides JJ. Dr. Branton noted that JJ has a history of harassing him before the current complaint. And the current complaint is not the first time that JJ has made allegations against him. JJ sent multiple letters to Dr. Branton in 2021, including a letter dated August 18th, addressed to Dr. Branton and four other individuals stating that a complaint is being filed with the licensing board. Also sent emails to him and authored an article on her foundation's website attacking Dr. Branton. Dr. Branton notes that he was hired by Mother to provide individual counseling. She has sole legal decision-making and showed the court's minute entry of that. Mother completed all intake forms. Dr. Branton met with both parents. And noted, Dr. Branton noted that towards the end of the treatment, Father attempted to intimidate Dr. Branton. Dr. Branton also noted that he has not been contacted by Mesa Police Department since JJ made a report. The reports from Mesa PD were submitted. JJ made false and defamatory claims about Dr. Branton and falsely stated that all of the children were forced to see Dr. Branton. Also falsely reported that Dr. Branton had exposed himself to Sun and made a accusation that Dr. Branton was part of a group of pedophiles that was preying on children for sex trafficking. The police report includes a summary of a forensic interview of the son conducted at the Mesa Family Advocacy Center. Sun reported that Dr. Branton rubbed himself on his thigh at times, but denied that he had ever been touched inappropriately and never was made to look at pornography. And in conclusion, Dr. Branton said that it appears likely that the son has been manipulated into making false and misleading statements against Dr. Branton. And that he requests that The board dismissed this complaint. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Yeah. So you have 5 minutes to address the board.
And okay, then I can do this in 5 minutes.
Okay. And then after that, the board members may have questions for you. So please go.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Absolutely. First of all, the Foundation for Child Victims of the Family Courts both does advocacy and litigation against dealing with high conflict divorce in which there is credible evidence that there is bias and fraud in the court. And this is based on a team of forensic experts and attorneys. And I am not the only employee of the board. There are a number of incorrect statements. The evidence of the father coming in with complaints about multiple aspects of the court's proceeding being biased and transferring the children into the hands of an abusive parent is a consistent pattern that we see in family courts attempting to move cases along quickly and settle them on the basis of one parent's good, one the other parent is bad, and accusations of alienation. The father never did physically threaten. There's no credibility to the complaint that that the father physically threatened Dr. Brenton. There's a very clear statement, affidavit from the father, as to exactly what occurred when he came to pick up his son at session, and as he opened the door, came into contact with Dr. Branton and his son at that point, and it was at that session that the son, whom I had sessions with, stated that Dr. Branton was playing with himself, with the words that he used in session. He was never exposed himself. The son gave very detailed descriptions as to exactly what was going on in each of the sessions, and it had to do with masturbation in the sessions. And the accusations did not have anything to do with Dr. Branton exposing himself, but of touching the son, grabbing him around the neck, and touching his thigh in a way that made him uncomfortable. In addition, there was detailed descriptions within my complaint about the interactions and the statements made by Dr. Branton that made the son very uncomfortable and very distressed. And this young man who is a 15-year-old teenager, son of a veteran and a kind of masculine, dealing with his own identity as a young man, was very, very disturbed and felt threatened and in great conflict about the situations. I also found, from having seen all of the records provided, in the reports from Dr. Branton, that his reports were incoherent. They were not based on content relating to the history or dynamics of the couple in question, or accurate statements within the case of events that had occurred, or diagnostic material that would represent the kinds of statements that were made in the report. The reports were accusatory, biased, and not grounded in either clinical information or representation of events that had occurred, nor were they representative of the statements that the child or whatever subject were had been made. So my three complaints involved very serious acting out within the family that involved the complaining parent of being physically brutal and sexually brutal. And in the and in one of the complaints, it involved incest by the mother towards two sons. Yes, Dr. Branton did not mention any of the accusations or the detailed complaints that were described and filed and placed in the court record by a clinical psychologist in Arizona. I've had three complaints of very much the same kind. My complaints are very, very detailed in terms of the behavior being discussed, and the comments that were read into the record were at the end of the record, they were summaries of my evaluation of fraud and deception. As to the son was not being coached. There was no suggestion whatsoever that a 15-year-old boy who was crying and extremely upset and had not several sessions but 15 sessions, which were in fact court ordered. The children were court ordered to go to him. Dr. Branton has a history of referring clients to an organization called Family Bridges, which is an organization with no base. It's a court order in a hotel room, and children are subjected to isolation, interrogation, brutal attacks by the members who are unlicensed, whose license were removed for cause and were extensively reviewed by in extensive litigation. My licensing, just because we're short of time, was removed in New Jersey, which did occasion a witch hunt against me. I had filed, I was simply an advocate. This was before the foundation and before I knew anything about court corruption, bias, and collusion. This was my entree into it. This was a case in 1999 in which a family of three children were being brutally treated and tortured by a sadistic father. The child, each of the children were begging to not be forced into visitation with him. I did extensive investigation of the case. I was working as a child analyst, and I am a my training is as a my extensive training is as a child therapist and child psychoanalyst, in addition to mediation, family therapy, individual and group therapy. Those were my licenses, and I had been licensed in New Jersey for 37 years at that point, with the same profile of training and ongoing personal analysis and supervision. I was an adjunct professor at New York State Psychiatric Institute, where I was trained, supervised, and taught for a number of years. So the incident that occurred with his family occasioned being threatened in court by three family court attorneys who said that if I testified in this case, that I would lose my license, that I would never practice in my field again. I then called the attorney, contacted the attorney general's office, had my secretary write a letter to the attorney general's office that I had just been threatened. Even though there was no court hearing, I was not there as an expert, and that I had no intention of testifying or being involved in any court case. At any rate, there was never a court hearing when I was present Family had been represented by an attorney. My name had not been included in any expert manner or expert report. And yet the court, the judge, made a complaint to the licensing board that was thoroughly inaccurate. This judge was finally removed from the court and from her. She was removed immediately from this case. She was subsequently removed from the family court.
JJS, do you have any other comments?
That the board has inaccurately presented material. I did not file a complaint with the police department. I contacted the police. And the police and the father contacted the police. The police also interviewed the child. There was not enough evidence. The circumstances did not provide enough evidence for him to be charged, for Dr. Branton to be charged, which is understandable. But the police report was made. It was made by the child. The child was interviewed, and it was considered highly credible. There were no threatening emails by me. There were not multiple emails at all. There's a number of each of the statements made into the record with regard to my interaction with.
Thank you. Ms. JJS, we need to wrap it up. We've passed the 5 minutes. We will probably have questions for you.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for your summary. I will now defer to Dr. Myers if you have any questions first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. thank you for being here, JJS. Just a moment ago, you said you did not make a complaint to the police. Is that correct?
I filed a report with the police.
Okay.
I'm a mandated reporter, but it was my place to call the sex crimes unit and make a report of what I had, of the information that I had. The father and the son contacted the police and went down to the police, and the boy was interviewed by the police.
Okay.
I made an initial complaint. Filing, and they followed up with it.
Okay. And you said you're a mandated reporter. Are you licensed this time, or what is your?
No, report? I'm not. I'm not.
Are you? Practicing
I work
as
a forensic expert and a mediator.
Okay. And
the executive director of the Foundation for Child Victims of the Family Courts.
And you said there's a. You have a team of attorneys and forensic experts as part
there
of the
There are a team of attorneys and very famous and well-known psychiatric and psychological forensic experts who work with the foundation.
And did anyone have contact with the child or father for this?
No, conflict? that was not the nature of the case. No, they were not... They were not being referred for rebuttal of forensic.
So you interviewed them, but cases. No one else was involved.
I interviewed the father and the son, and nobody else was involved. Well, they were involved in terms of knowing about the case, of being aware that we do work as a team, and so there were other people who were the normal group of people who. Review the intake, and then as issues come up that are critical, there are other people involved.
In this case,
I'm not the only one making the decision to move forward in certain ways.
Okay. And did you record any of the interactions with the son?
That wasn't the nature of my work. The recording of the interview with me and his you know, prior remarks, his written and record, the son's written and recorded remarks, were part of the interview. And the interview with me was recorded by the son.
The son recorded your interview with him.
Right.
Do you have a
copy
of
for the record? So we would both be very clear about exactly what was said in that interview, if it was needed for further court purposes.
Do you have access to that recording?
I do.
Why wasn't it submitted to us?
For quite a number of reasons, one of which, you know, my experience with the board has been that you've been extremely unprofessional and inaccurate. So I'm important in this, and that connect the pieces. So you're making a decision without, you know, without further.
But
5 minutes isn't enough to properly review.
The other. You also reported that the son had written about his experiences with Dr. Branton.
He had his own notes about prior sessions and his experiences. That, to my understanding, you know, that he had been, that the son had been quite disturbed about the sessions and the interactions, and felt that he was being forced into seeing this person by a court order, and under the threat that if he didn't, that he would be fully separated from his father.
Okay. Those were all of my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. JJS, I just want to kind of go back on the recording. So you have the recording, because that's kind of like a significant piece. You're saying that the son stated to you all these accusations regarding the doctor, and yet that wasn't provided to us. Can you explain again why we did ask for all information? And we also do not believe we have the notes from the son. Is that correct, Ms. Michelson?
No, you don't have the notes from the son. You have my complaint. As I said, I have not had good experience with this board in terms of prior issues with even the complaints against Branton on this issue. On cases, on other cases.
Let me ask you this, JJS.
It would be up to the client as to how much information they wanted to share. But you have already misrepresented a number of factual statements. So I'm not sure how while I would recommend that they turn over the material, I would also say that my experience with you to the present and at this moment is that your reporting of sensitive material has been extraordinarily sloppy and inaccurate.
But JJ,
so it would be up to them as to whether or not they want to hand this over. But you've had numerous complaints. This board has had numerous complaints about this person.
JJS, we're going to stay focused on this complaint because this is the complaint that is on our agenda.
Okay, well, I'm telling you what my recommendations are based on my experience with this board personally, as well as in terms of cases.
Okay, thank you for sharing that. I will just say that as the chair of this committee, that decisions are made based on evidence and information provided.
Okay. Evidence,
JJ,
and you have not handled it responsibly
JJ,
or even accurately. So
JJ,
it would be up to the client as to what they want to transfer to you.
JJS, thank you for your comments. We have the information you as the complainant has submitted. And now we're going to now transfer. Dr. Myers, do you have any more questions for JJS?
No, I would like to go into executive session for the purpose of
Okay.
Pending legal advice.
May I make one last statement?
No, not right now. Thank you. So I have a motion. Is that a motion?
Yes.
And I will second the motion. I need to go into executive session for legal advice. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We're going to move into executive session. All participants will just stay here, and magically we're going to disappear and go into a different room. And then, so please don't leave where you're at. And then we will reappear magically when Jennifer does that. All right. Thank you. All right. I think everybody is back in the meeting. Thank you for your patience and for waiting for us as we're in executive session. We have, as you all heard before we left into executive session, there is material that we did not receive as a board to review, and that is the recording of the conversation between Sun and JJS, as well as potential or alleged notes taken from the son regarding his visits with the doctor, which again, we did not receive this information. So at this point, we are going to be we will be requesting through a subpoena for all, and let me emphasize, all documentation regarding to this case that JJS, that you have, that it be provided to our board. And when we get that material, we will then put it on another agenda. We will not continue this for Dr. Branton and his representation, his attorney. At this point, we are going to complete the sum. We're not going to continue on this case because we don't have all the documentation, and we don't want to go into questions and then having to re-question later. So at this point, we're going to let you know we will be subpoena everything JJS. And then this would be placed on a further agenda. Ms. Galvin, is there need any kind of a vote on this or?
Madam Chair, this is Andrew Turk on behalf of Dr. Branton. May I address the committee?
Ms. Galvin?
Yeah, I would allow him to address.
Okay, thank you. I'm just making sure I check my attorney. Yes, go ahead, Mr. Turk.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, council, on behalf of Dr. Branton, I'm going to strenuously object to the continuance of this proceeding. We have had the complaint actually mentions the recordings and the quote unquote musings of the juvenile. We have requested and obtained a copy of the investigative record that includes emails and notes of telephone calls between board staff, Ms. Michelson, and JJS. There were repeated requests for information, repeated promises from JJS that they would be provided. We provided a robust response on behalf of Dr. Branton. Included in that response is the police interview with the individual child. And that interview does not substantiate this complaint. We don't see what good having additional materials would be. The information from the minor was available. It wasn't provided, but more importantly, the interview with the police department was. So assuming that the interview with the police department is consistent with what was told to Ms. JJS.
There's actually supposed to be a secondary interview.
Sir, Ms. Michelson, can you? Thank you. Sorry about that.
Yes, and I object to any participation by CA in this, as his representative already had an opportunity to speak at well over 5 minutes, and Mr. CA did not provide a statement. Ms. JJS referenced an affidavit. There's no affidavit from Mr. CA in
the connection issues.
Ms. Michelson, thank you.
Madam Chair, it might be helpful to clarify who can speak at this time.
The only person that can speak at now, right at this point, is Dr. Branton and his attorney. Everyone else should be muted unless you're called on me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there was ample opportunity to provide this information. It's going to be duplicative of what is included in the police report. We don't believe, we understand the board's desire to have everything, but I think that has to be weighed in the impact that this is having on my client, Dr. Branton. He's been under this complaint for months now. He spent thousands of dollars responding to the materials that were provided. He spent quite a bit more money having me here today. It's very distressing to be the subject of a report, particularly of this complaint of this nature, not to mention the police report. Notably, the police are dismissing the case. And now I understand that the criminal standard is different from the professional conduct standard that the board applies, but we believe, Dr. Branton believes, it's fundamentally unfair to allow Ms. JJS to come in at the last minute after having multiple opportunities to provide information and say, well, the board's not considering. Well, the reason the board's not considering it is because JJS, as you heard her, she doesn't respect the board. She doesn't respect this process. So she didn't give you this material. She didn't give you a whole bunch of other material. So Dr. Branton did. We gave you the police reports. We gave you the recording of the interview. We gave you everything that the board needs to determine that the claims that are being made in this case are not supported by the evidence. And I'm not even going to get to that unless you ask me to. But at this moment, we strenuously object to any continuance of this matter. And we believe that we should be allowed to go forward and address the complaint, and that the board and the committee should reach its decision today without the submission of additional materials.
All right. And could you introduce yourself officially for the...
I'm sorry. My name is Andrew Turk. I'm with the Rose Law Group, and I am the attorney who prepared the response that was provided to the board.
All right, thank you. I'm going to ask, thank you for those comments. I'm going to ask to go into executive session again to get legal advice. So I make that motion. Is there a second?
Seconded.
All right, we have a motion and a second to go into executive session. We will now move.
Ma'am, I would like to say something.
We will now move. We will now move into executive session. No one else has been at request.
He's also aware of the situation of this complaint.
And the concerns for Dr. Branton. However, there are allegations that a child has reported. And if there's more evidence to look into that, I want to subpoena it. So I would make a motion to subpoena the video recording of JJS's interview with the son.
Would that include the recording allegedly made by the son of his interview with JJS, as well as notes taken by the son?
Yeah, and previous recordings by the son that JJS alluded to.
I have really mixed feelings, because I really feel as though we have asked the complainant several times for information. And if we had, several times. And if this was, this information was so important, that then that should have been provided to us. However, because of the allegations, and we're talking about a minor, I think, we have an obligation to request it, but I think it's very disappointing and concerning that it wasn't provided up front. I think Mr. Herc makes a good position. Anyway, his client has done due diligence and have provided us with all the information that they have, that they thought that we needed. Mm-hmm. And so for us now to stop because the complainant hadn't provided all the information, I find is disconcerting.
Ma'am, I've tried to get in contact with Michael said several times.
You are not being requested to speak at this point. So I will, I agree, with Dr. Meyer, and because of it is, it is a serious allegation. So I will second your motion for the subpoenaed information. So we have a motion and a second, and with that, we will table this matter. Is that part of the motion, Mr. Myers?
Madam Chair, may I make one more comment, please?
Yes, you may.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another concern that, frankly, we have is, again, the first part of it is what you've already stated, is that there were multiple requests for evidence and it wasn't provided. The other one, frankly, is that whatever evidence might be provided now might also be created now. So I don't know how the board will guard against that, and what protections and what ability the board has to look into whether a recording was created when it's told that it's created. But we do have considerable concerns that we have now provided the board with a very detailed response. I'm not sure how much of that has been provided to JJS, but our concern is that evidence will be created to address the issue, and that it will be contradictory to the interview that was given to the police, which we've provided to the board, and that this thing will just continue to go on. So that is an additional concern we have, and I understand that the motion has been seconded, but I would again urge the board to reject the motion, move forward, and bring this matter to a conclusion.
I think your thoughts are duly noted, and I think that those thoughts would be definitely identified in the minutes. And as we move forward, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. But again, I think those comments will definitely be duly noted.
Ma'am, my son is at Kenyon State.
We are going to now move on to the next agenda item. And we will move on to Dr. Davis Wilson. I do believe you have joined us.
Yes, I am present.
All right. Welcome. We are now going to move to agenda item.
Oh, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Thank you. We're going to move to agenda item 4A, which is complaint 2216, Dr. James Holmes. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead. Would you please provide a brief summary?
Madam Chairman, if I may just briefly, if I can just let the committee and Dr. Holmes and his attorney know that I at one time represented PSRB. I have a familiarity with Dr. Holmes through my representation of PSRB. I do not recall the complainant in this case or anything about his specific relationship with PSRB. I just wanted that on the record. I do not believe it's going to impact my ability to advise the committee members, but I wanted Dr. Holmes to be aware of that.
All right. Thank you. All right. Dr. Davis-Wilson, if you'd like to provide a summary.
Yes, thank you. I was pulling it up. So on January 3rd, 2022, the board staff received RW's complaint in the mail. It is noted that the complaint did come in, or a letter came in prior to that date. However, it was not on the complaint form, and it was not specified as to the first name and information related to the doctor. So the formal complaint did come in on January 3rd. RW alleges that Dr. Holmes did harm to him through treatment by withholding access to a razor to shave his face. He also alleges that Dr. Holmes decided that RW was not safe, yet on a couple of occasions they had a verbal agreement to review grounds privileges, but that those grounds privileges were restricted at one point because of aggressive and dangerous acts by RW. RW was under the impression in November that December 20th that review would occur. However, alleges that on December 20th he was told that that would not happen and that follow-up would have to happen a week later. He does feel that Dr. Holmes has been neglectful in the treatment of him as a person with a diagnosis being treated in the Arizona sorry, the Arizona State Hospital, and feels that at this time, or alleges that at this time, Dr. Holmes has failed to protect the patient's rights by allowing other staff to engage in abusive treatments. On February 3rd, Dr. Holmes responded to the complaint. This was done in a timely manner via his attorney, Dr. Cohen. He provided a complete chart during the time frame in which RW was Dr. Holmes' patient. He does note that he has been licensed by the board since 2012, though he has been employed by the state hospital since 2010. He does provide us his qualifications and experience. He notes that he started treating RW in October of 2021, and that through this documentation, he had worked with the team as far as evaluation of privileges specific to, again, aggressive and dangerous behavior exhibited by RW. Dr. Holmes does state that the status of the razor is outside of his scope and outside of his job, and that at the time that they were to review and reconsider privileges in December, there was a noted incident related to, again, aggressive body language towards staff, which resulted in them reviewing, giving more time to then review the privileges. I believe that all of the information has been provided to us regarding the case file and RW's complaint, and that actually concludes my summary on this event.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Is RW the complainant in the meeting? If you are, if you could signal or unmute yourself. RW? All right, I don't see him or see that he's on a phone. I will now ask Dr. Holmes, I believe you are here with us, and I believe you are represented with your attorney. If you could both introduce yourself, and then if you'd like to provide a 5-minute introduction to your position, and then we may have questions for you.
Okay. I'm Dr. James Holmes.
I'm Ken Moskow. As was earlier stated, my partner David Cohn had prepared the response. As Ms. Michelson knows, we had a little scheduling issue, so I'm here on behalf of Mr. Cohn today, and of course on behalf of Dr. Holmes, who will make a brief statement.
So I want to thank the board for hearing the complaint and giving me an opportunity to speak today. As you had already mentioned, I've been practicing as a psychologist since 2012 in Arizona. I have been working at the state hospital since 2010. Most of my work has been on the forensic campus at Ash, and where the complainant resides. The majority of our patients have committed serious violent crimes and are at ASH for additional treatment and evaluation. So I take a lot of pride in my work at ASH. I care a lot about our patients. In this particular complaint, I didn't believe I did anything wrong, but I am my own worst critic. And if the board sees that I did anything wrong, I do want to learn from it. I want to grow. I want to get better as a psychologist. There appear to be 3 claims in this particular incident. One that you referenced was being denied access to Sharps, which was an administrative decision. The second complaint appears to be that the patient was upset about being denied access to their dorm area, and that was due to a staff shortage, and that's a nursing decision and out of my purview. Although I have been an advocate in the past, if the patients couldn't go back to their rooms, I would offer to take them out on the mall just to get off the unit, have some fresh air, some additional space. And the last thing was the issue regarding the privileges. We review the privileges on the 28th, which is the date when I initially intended. And I don't know if you read the email we were supposed to review it on the 28th. At that time, the whole treatment team met. That included the social worker, myself, the unit rehabilitation coordinator, the nurse, and also in consultation with the treating psychiatrist. We all decided that the patient had demonstrated safe and appropriate behaviors over those approximately 30 days and agreed to reinstate the privileges. And from then on, we informed the patient. We also, I had the attending psychiatrist write the order. So the privileges were in effect that same day. I don't think I have anything else to add that hasn't already been included in the response. I appreciate your time and your service to the public. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for the comments. I did see somebody joined in just as a caller, Ms. Michelson. I just want to, is that RW by any chance? RW, are you on the line? Okay. Just trying to do diligence here. All right. Thank you for those comments. Does anyone have any questions for the doctor? Dr. Myers, no. Dr. Davis Wilson, I can't see you. Do you have any questions?
I apologize. No, I do not. I'm having a Zoom and connection issues today. I had to let board staff know. So I do apologize. But no, I do not have any questions for the doctor.
All right. And I do not have any questions either. I think you addressed each of the concerns that were outlined, very clearly. Since there are no further questions, we will now move into deliberations. Deliberations is a time for the committee members to talk amongst ourselves without interruptions from the complainant, respondent, or attorney. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead. Would you like to start the conversation?
Absolutely. I'd first like to say that the professionalism displayed by the doctor has been kind of a breath of fresh air as far as the response. It was very thorough. The presentation and professionalism today presented before us. In review of the complaint, I know we need more doctors willing to work in this arena because I know that there's a lot of complexities that go into providing services of this capacity, and it's not for the faint of heart. I do understand the concerns of the complainant as it pertains to we are individuals and we do have desire to have personal rights afforded to us and that we do. Wants to be treated humane. The understaffing, I say this often, like the world is understaffed right now. And so I do understand the frustration related to that as well. But in reviewing everything, again, understanding where the complainant's concerns are coming from, I just simply don't think that any wrongdoing has been done by the doctor as far as his ability to provide the support in this setting and to do it in such a way that that does continue to support the promotion of rights and dignity for his patient.
All right, thank you. Dr. Myers, any comments?
I don't see any violations here. I think the standard of care and more has been met.
All right. I do believe, like as I said, mentioned prior, I believe you addressed each one of the complaints. Again, two of them appear to be out of your purview as far as being able to have because of the employee shortage. And the other one appears to have been taken care of. Again, there, I don't see any statute or rule violation. Dr. Davis Wilson, did you want to make a motion or a motion to be go forward?
Yes, I would make a motion that we dismiss this complaint.
All right, we have a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, doctor, for being here with us today. You may be probably notified by our staff, but the case will not be moving forward.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. We are now moving to item number, complaint number, item agenda 4B, complainant complaint number 2215, Dr. Sandra Novick. Dr. Myers, you are the lead on this case, if you'd like to provide a brief summary.
Sure. On December 21st, 2021, board staff received JS's complaint that Dr. Novak, performed in an unethical conduct that is in violation of 18 U.S. Code 1035, false statements relating to healthcare matters, and violating APA ethics code. Dr. Novak was issued her psychology license in 2020, previously practiced as a licensed psychologist in Illinois since 2014. Since October 2021, she has been employed as a federal contractor where she works at a mental health clinic at Air Force Base in Tucson, providing services to active duty military members. The complainant has served in the Air Force since 2017 as a physician. And I want to state that I'm going to try to summarize this case without mentioning any diagnoses, which we cannot share in an open meeting. But if either party wants to discuss specific diagnoses, we will need to go into executive session. So I will do my best to just summarize without going into that, and we can follow up if necessary. JS notes that Dr. Novak authorized a document, administrative discharge summary, that advocated for JS's discharge from the military based on a specific diagnosis, which could cause significant harm to JS's career as a physician. JS also alleges that Dr. Novak violated ethics code avoiding harm, and that the tone in the document is adversarial, omits potentially beneficial diagnoses and facts, includes false statements, half-truths, and misquoted various medical records. JS feels that she does not meet the criteria for the diagnosis that was listed as the reason for the administrative discharge. JS also alleged that Dr. Novak engaged in gaslighting and was untruthful about diagnoses, and then JS also reported that Dr. Novak violated APA Ethics Code 1010 about terminating therapy for failing to terminate therapy when it becomes reasonable that the client no longer needs the service. JS stated that she reported the emotionally damaging nature of her experience with Dr. Novak, and that a mental health technician documented this emotional trauma from JS working with Dr. Novak in the medical record. And Dr. Novak acknowledged this report, but did not remove herself from services. JS submitted a variety of statements and documentation to support her allegations. On February 11th, 2022, Dr. Novak provided her response, noting that she's employed as a federal contractor for the Air Force Base. The clinic operates as a team-based mental health facility in which patients are assigned to a primary therapist, and that Dr. Novak was assigned to JS, but it was primarily as a case manager as opposed to a therapist, because JS was receiving services outside of the military services. Dr. Novak reported that JS is an Air Force physician and her normal tour of duty was expected to end in 2023. However, JS was recommended for an early administrative separation from the military, and Dr. Novak prepared and signed the administrative separation summary on June 16th, 2021. Dr. Novak summarized JS's treatment services that occurred outside of the military clinic. And noted that in regard to the diagnosis, the primary diagnosis listed on the administrative discharge summary was based on her interactions with JS as well as record reviews for several years. JS responded in response to not removing herself from the provider at JS's request, that Dr. Novak did talk to her supervisor, but there was no other provider available in a timely manner, and so it was determined that she would stay on as the case manager. Dr. Novak also noted that she is not the sole decision-making authority in regard to the administrative summary, administrative discharge summary, and also noted that her role is as a to determine fitness for military duty, as opposed to treatment for mental services unrelated to military service. And that concludes my summary of the case.
Thank you, Dr. Myers. I'm going to ask, is JS here, the complainant? JS, you'd like to unmute yourself? I'm not receiving a response. I will then move to Dr. Novak, and I believe is also being represented here today by Dr. Akins. If you'd both like to introduce yourself and whoever you'd like to provide like a 5-minute opening statements, and then we'll probably have questions for you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Dr. Farron Akins. I'm counsel for your licensee, and I'll certainly let her introduce herself. And I know she has a few words she'd like to share with you this morning. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Sandra Novak. I am a clinical psychologist who is currently working at the Air Force Base, as stated. Thank you very much for this opportunity to address you in regards to this. In regard to my role with the complainant, I was not her psychotherapist. I did not do therapy with her. I was assigned to replace a previous clinician who had prepared an outside care plan for her for off-base treatment. So I was in the capacity of case manager. So as part of my duties, I met irregularly with the complainant to monitor her progress and participation with her outside providers. And as part of my responsibilities, I did prepare the administrative separation documents. The first being a memo that goes directly to her chain of command, and then a summary, the administrative summary, that actually is included in her medical file and not dispersed. I have the training and experience. I am credentialed to write such summaries. But I was never the primary decision maker in terms of retaining or severing her from her military status or her position. The necessity for completing the informational assessment of her fitness for duty was based on several factors. One was being that there was avoidance of her working with her patients. She was not following plans and decisions made by her leadership. She was very much focused on her own issues versus that of her mission at the time. After several months, it was also very clear that she really was not improving in terms of her mental health treatment, and was participating in quite an extensive level of care over those months that I was aware of. She's very mistrusting of her leadership and having interpersonal difficulties, not only at work, but also in her personal life. So the purpose of my report was to provide information to decision makers regarding her ability to function in the military. This includes being ready to deploy on a moment's notice, to provide the quality treatment to her patients in her clinic. And in the, you know, in the event that there were, there was combat military, or I mean, sorry, there was an opportunity for treating actual combat or combat issues within her clinic, she would need to be prepared for that. It was not technically a clinical evaluation for the purpose of better understanding her psychological dynamics or to develop that treatment plan. It was not determined to be a medical fit assessment that might lead to a disability claim or severance with benefits. That was not the purpose. The process and format and the ultimate product of my investigation and work were done under the military protocol. I followed the required standards that are outlined and did the work. I believe my efforts were within the parameters of what is expected, but I do not have information after that about any outcomes that may happen once that report is actually submitted, because that is out of my hands. Once my report was submitted, I didn't have any other involvement. She did take various issue with various aspects of my reports. She certainly disagrees with my ultimate conclusions in the reports. However, even the complainant had reported to me and others that she was not thriving in the military and that she would prefer to work in health spa or concierge medicine. If she was dissatisfied with my efforts, she knows that there would be an appeal process. She also had the right, of course, to talk through her chain of command about concerns that she might have had with me. Unfortunately, she didn't take that route, and she chose to file the complaints against my psychology license. Thank you. I'm more than happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Dr. Novak. I'm going to ask Dr. Myers, if since he's the lead, if you'd like to start with questioning. And again, if we're going to talk about any detail of the, I think of the any psychologist or medical, we need to go in exact session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Novak, thank you for being here. One of the, I guess I would like to hear a little bit more about your training and credentialing for work in a military setting. You started at Tucson Air Force Base in October 2021, correct?
Correct. In June 2021.
Okay. Sorry. Do you have other experience or training working in a military setting?
I had done a year practicum at Heinz VA Hospital in Chicago. So I worked with veterans and limited active duty members at that location.
Okay. And though it looked like most of your training was working with children and adolescents.
No, it was, it's people of all ages. I did see a lot of children and adolescents, but no, there was a, the only place that I was specifically seeing children only was at Boys Town.
Okay. And then you said that you are trained and credentialed to prepare the administrative separation documentation. Can you explain what that means? There was no credentialing forms or anything like that. What do you mean by being credentialed?
That means that I'm credentialed through the medical group, through the Air Force Base, but there's also an onboarding, on-processing training that's completed with, in this case, our officer in charge, who is also a licensed psychologist. And before we can be approved to do any of this work on our own, we have to meet the standards of at minimum do one or C1 do one kind of thing. But having to know the Air Force instructions, the Department of Health agency instructions, and also these documents are completed, but they're also reviewed before they're actually submitted to the leadership in question.
And was the administrative discharge summary in question here reviewed by your supervisor?
Yes, before it was placed into the medical chart. Yes. And
did you seek consultation with other providers about this decision as well as all of the related diagnoses?
Yes. As it was documented in my response, I had spoken with the previous provider before I was assigned to this case. I was able to speak with her. I spoke with our officer in charge and flight chief about these particular things, because again, they would likely be the ones who would be following up or contacted in the event that there were any questions or concerns moving forward.
Okay, thank you. I have no further questions.
Okay, I do have a few questions. Who asked you to complete the administrative separation summary?
Nobody asked me specifically. It was a decision made based on the presenting diagnosis at the time and the ongoing concerns about her about the complainant's ability to do her job and be fit for duty at the time. So it was a decision made on several factors, which were, again, some behaviorally based, but also due to several symptoms of her diagnoses that were very concerning in terms of her being able to be fit for duty. I would not have been comfortable in a situation if she were to have to be deployed to be able to do that without harm to herself or someone else.
And so with the, I mean, there's obviously where concerns about her work quality, you know, things. Is there not a way in the military, and I'm not familiar with the military, I'm going to right out there, where you do a progressive discipline and then termination? Is this the only way to have someone separate, is through a psychological evaluation or that you did?
No, and that is one of the confounding issues. Is I am speaking specifically on her behavioral or her mental health and the prognosis of her mental health moving forward. There is a separate avenue that only her supervision and her leadership directly would be addressing the quality of her work, her attendance, for example, her ability to do her job. I would not be involved in that. I do know that she was, she had relinquished her credentials before she started, or just as she started treatment. But after that, I did not have any information because that is handled by the medical leadership as well, or the medical group leadership, as well as an impaired healthcare provider program. And she was following or given information on how to move forward in her work setting. So I was speaking directly towards her mental health.
Right. I don't have any more questions right now for the open meeting. I do have some that I'd like to move into executive session, but before that, I'd like to ask Dr. Davis-Wilson if she has any questions for the open meeting.
I do not. I would support going into executive session.
So was that a motion?
Yes, please. That will be...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say for the purpose of discussing PHI.
Medical, okay. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
Seconded.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. We'll move into executive session. So you're going to magically just move into another room. Please know that. I do believe we're all here. So we are back in regular session. Are there any further questions for Dr. Novak for open meeting? Hearing none, Dr. Meyer, you are the lead. Would you like to, we are going to now move into deliberations. It's a time for the committee to deliberate amongst ourselves without any interruptions. Dr. Meyer, I'd ask if you would like to start the discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there are really kind of two complaints. One about avoiding harm to the client Jay has alleged that the diagnosis and the submission of the administrative discharge summary was potentially causing harm. And I'll admit I have limited understanding of military mental health services, but from my understanding, Dr. Novak seemed to be operating according to the requirements of her position, focused on fitness for military duty. And filing the administrative separation, which was reviewed by supervisors, seems to be part of her duties. So I don't see, an issue there. JS also noted that she felt Dr. Novak was gaslighting her and making false statements related to healthcare. She alleged that several diagnoses were not considered or mentioned in the administrative separation document, but to me it did look like prior diagnoses were included and were addressed, and a problem was that the outside treatment was not providing services or not providing records of services. And that was going to be one of my questions for JS, is why didn't she just recommend or request the records herself and then submit them? But it seems like the lack of any communication with outside therapy was causing problems in multiple ways. So I didn't see any evidence of false statements or gaslighting. And then the second complaint was that Dr. Novak should have terminated services with JS. And again, to me, it looks like Dr. Novak brought that up with her supervisor, attempted to do that with the within the available options, and there was just no one else available at the time. And so it was either not provide any case management or coordination or continue with Dr. Novak. And so I don't see another option for her there. So I don't I don't see any violations or areas of concern in this case.
Is that are you making a motion?
That was just my perspective. I figured I'd let everybody else have their say before I made a motion.
All right. Okay, Dr. Davis-Wilson?
I do agree with Dr. Meyer. I think that that the information provided, given the nature and the scope of the work that the doctor was doing, aligns with the documentation that's been provided to us. And I too wish that the complainant would have been present to ask some questions and seek some clarification to help as well. But with what we have before us, I'm not finding any violations.
All right, thank you. And I would agree with both my colleagues. Would anyone like to make a motion?
Make a motion to dismiss this claim.
And a second?
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any just am opposing? Nope, hearing none, it moves forward. So the case will be dismissed. You'll probably be hearing from our a follow-up from our board executive committee.
Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for being with us today. We do appreciate it. Mr. Akins, thank you too. Dr. Akins.
Sure. Our pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. We are going to now go to our last case, complaint T2205. Dr. Gloria Malone, I am the lead. I'll provide a brief summary on that case. Dr. Malone was issued a psychologist license by the board in 1984. In 2019, the board received a complaint from Dr. Malone's client. During that investigation, medical records indicated that Dr. Malone was hospitalized on several occasions between 2008 and 2009 due to, I don't know, Ms. Galvin, can I know, just due to some concerns. And ultimately, Dr. Malone decided to sign a consent agreement to surrender her license due to that investigation. So approximately 2.5 years ago, the license was surrendered effective January 2022. The board received an email from an individual who indicated that Dr. Malone had responded to a post on the Nextdoor app, which is an app that all your neighbors can be on. Which a neighbor inquired about therapy referral. In her December 26, 2021 reply, Dr. Malone told the person seeking assistance that she was a psychologist and is welcoming new patients to her home office. In response to the allegations, Dr. Malone submitted a brief response in a timely manner. Dr. Malone submitted a response through her attorney, Mr. Harry Howell. Dr. Malone in it said that she does not hold herself out as a licensed psychologist. However, she did not recognize that despite her education and undergraduate and degrees that she was ARS 322084 prohibited her from using the word psychologist. Immediately upon receiving a complaint, Dr. Malone discontinued referring to herself as a psychologist. Dr. Malone is a little distressed over it after 40 years of a career in psychology, not realizing she can no longer use the term. Dr. Malone is in full compliance of ARS 3228. She's not practicing psychology, does not hold herself out as a licensed psychologist, and will no longer use the protected designation word for any future purposes. The board executive group members followed up with her attorney with additional questions. Why was Dr. Malone offering her services in response to Nextdoor post inquiring about the therapist referral when she surrendered her license in 2019? Why did Dr. Malone not reply to the questions on Nextdoor thread inquiring about her status of her license? Why has Dr. Malone not deleted her Nextdoor post with the psychologist referral, as well as the profile on Nextdoor for her business, which was active at the date that the questions were sent? And how many clients has Dr. Malone seen at her practice since surrendering her 2019 license? Please provide a list which contains the client's initials and service dates. the response that the staff received was, again, that Dr. Malone is in frail health. She's no longer practicing psychology. She would not be able to attend our meeting. She has since deleted her account off of Nextdoor, that Dr. Malone is not practicing psychologist nor conducting any psychology practice. So that concludes my summary. Neither Dr. Malone, as I know, and I'm going to ask Dr. Malone, are you here? Or I do not believe it. Her attorney also said that he would not be able to attend the meeting today. So this is the information that we have. I would say what is somewhat concerning is that there was no reference in her response to the board's questions in regards to, you know, has she seen any clients? I mean, I don't see an absolutely no, I have not, unless I missed that. Are there any other comments from the committee members?
Yeah, I'm a little concerned about her response because she said she didn't realize she couldn't use the word psychologist.
Yeah.
But that she said she's accepting new clients is way beyond just a title violation. So, but I'm not sure how to proceed with figuring out if she is.
I would suggest there's enough evidence to move this forward to the board with concern of using the word psychologist and potentially providing a practicing psychology. And I would suggest we move it to the board with a recommendation of a cease and desist to the doctor. Can that go out? Can we recommend that and do it ourselves? Or does it need to go to the board?
It would need to go to the board, and you can recommend that this matter be addressed with a cease and desist. Jennifer has received information that the attorney would at least be present if this matter went to the board, and perhaps in that notice, Jennifer could ask him to be prepared to address whether, in fact, she is still seeing patients or when did she stop seeing patients.
Okay, and so I'm looking quickly at my list of violations. Which violation would, because she's not actually licensed, so would it just be using the term psychologist, or can we?
It's under 32.2084, page 33.
I was looking at the statute.
Yeah, that's the statute.
It's not under 32.6061.
No, it would be a title violation under 32.2084, and the committee could determine which subsection is applicable.
And what page is that on the, do you know that?
33 at the end.
Jennifer, you're so good at those page numbers. I mean, it's like, okay, thank you.
Well, but what about, this is just the title violation, right? What about practicing?
I think subsection... what is it? A, it is a class 2 misdemeanor for a person not licensed pursuant to this chapter to engage in the practice of psychology.
Okay.
I definitely say A, which what Jennifer just mentioned. And then C, which is for a person not licensed pursuant to use the designated word psychology, psychologist. So I see it as a violation of 32.2084A, and then C, 1, and C, 1, and 2. Does that seem, is she not licensed?
Seconded. Was that a motion?
As a motion. Thank you. So we have a motion and a second. Am I missing anything? Just quickly looking at that. I don't think so.
That appears to be the relevant statutes.
Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none. This motion will then, this case will then move to the full board. Thank you. That's the last item on our agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
And I'll second that.
We got a motion to adjourn and a second. All in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? None. We are completed. Thank you. And Jennifer.